What is going on, everybody? Welcome to a Theology of Hustle and a very special Theology of Hustle. This is our 100th episode, which is awesome. This was so much fun. JJ and I were so excited to reach this milestone of 100 episodes and just felt like we needed to do something fun, different, and just kind of, you know, keep it fresh a little bit and celebrate, honestly, 100 episodes. And so we sat down at our friend Aaron and Jody's house outdoors. You'll hear that in the audio, but we sit outdoors and we just kind of have a conversation about life. And that takes us in a lot of different directions. We do talk about their work. Jody talks about, you know, finding midwifery and just like how near and dear to her heart birth is and the reasons behind all that. Aaron talks about being a kind of an entrepreneur and what that has looked like in his life. We also talk about Sabbath. They are the people who sort of got us on this whole Sabbath kick. And so there's a really in-depth conversation there. And we just talk about community. I think it's super important stuff. This is just a super fun episode. They're people that we have spent a lot of time around the table with. And I think that shows in this episode, and you're going to get a lot out of it. There's a lot of wisdom here, and they're just awesome people to be around. I should note, however, that this episode is family friendly throughout until I jump into the final two questions. Jody's answer is going to surprise you, and your little ones will probably have questions you may not want to answer right now. So just a warning about that. Other than that, this is a clean, family-friendly episode. So just be aware of that. And before we get to the interview, I just want to remind you of a couple things. Just make sure you're following me on social media at Theology of Hustle on Instagram and Facebook, and at Curry Blanford on Twitter. You can stay up to date with what's going on. Hear random thoughts of mine that you may not even care about. You know, it's a great place for social media. I want to say thank you for hanging with us for 100 episodes and following along this journey. It's been super fun. We have lots of great stuff still coming up. So, but it's been an amazing time, and I can't wait for you to hear from Aaron and Jody. All right. Well, so we are, I guess, at the Hoekstra's Magic Table tonight outside having fun.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you would say this is a magic table.
It's not so magic, right? Compared to your table.
It's pretty magical, though.
I think it's you guys that make the magic table. So if you're here, this is the magic table.
It becomes the magic table. I don't know.
Okay. So the magic table poured it over in like some time capsule.
Right.
Of some kind.
Boom. Yeah. Got it. Okay. So we're not even doing that, though. This is still a Theology of Hustle episode, 100th episode. So we just wanted to kind of bring our friends on and just like talk about random stuff. So that's what we're here for.
So sorry.
In advance. Click off now.
You can turn it off now.
They'll be back. They always come back. So I think let's go ahead and just sort of jump off and just maybe like acquaint everybody with y'all, with the Hoekstras. Do y'all mind sort of maybe talking a little bit just about like what life has, you know, a little bit of the trajectory of life, I guess.
And who you are and your family and what you're doing now. Right. Just a little bit.
Just a couple things.
Go for it.
Well, my name's Aaron Hoekstra.
Let's start.
I'm married to my lovely bride, Joellen Hoekstra, over here to my right. She's holding currently, just to set the stage a little bit, we are in our backyard at the Blanford's Magic Table that ported over from Warrenville to West Chicago. And it's like a picture perfect sort of evening.
It's beautiful.
It's 70 degrees. The sun's beginning to set. The kids are somewhere.
They're fine.
We don't talk
Blythe,
about that.
Yeah. Blythe is in charge.
Yeah, that's right.
They're fine.
She's got it.
But my wife, Joellen, to my right, is holding our fifth child, little Rhett. He is
7 weeks.
Almost 8 weeks.
8 weeks.
8 weeks on Tuesday. And there were like 4 or 5 or 10 elements to the question you asked.
Right. Yeah. Well, just talk a little bit just about maybe the trajectory? Because, you know, when we met y'all had just gotten out of vocational ministry and were sort of doing different things, and maybe just a little bit of that sort of trajectory there.
Yeah. Yeah, that was an interesting time in my life, because, you know, in our life, really. I think we went from a position where we sort of wanted nothing to do with the church because our time working in the church just didn't pan out the way we expected. And so all the way to now, where we feel way more engaged in the church and the mission of local church. And I was a worship leader at a local church for almost 4 years. And, came out of that to work, I guess, in the corporate world. I don't know.
The real world.
Is that where everyone else works? The corporate world?
Yes, there's the church world and then
there's the real church world.
Yep.
And there's the real world. Yeah. Did a little nonprofit work after doing some worship ministry or music ministry, if you want to call it that. And then ended up, you know, I've got a little bit of an entrepreneurial sort of bone in me.
Just a little bit.
And so I'm sort of speaking for myself here, but my family was along on this journey, I promise. But I'm pretty like, I don't know, I guess I'm a believer that opportunities that are presented to me are, if I'm putting myself in the position that is ready and willing to accept what the Spirit and what God is calling me to do in my life, that the opportunity is just like that open door is a door that should be walked through, you know? That's a very simplistic way to say it, but so, started getting kind of involved in sort of new startup-y type businesses, nonprofit work, which led to doing some work in the cycling industry, which then led me to corporate innovation, which is where I'm...
Normal trajectory.
Yeah, where I'm at now. But it's interesting. We had this conversation earlier, JJ, but it's interesting, you know, because JJ asked, you know, is Uganda still like a thing for you guys, you know? Mm-hmm. And because... many who probably are listening to this know that we've spent some time in East Africa, specifically in Uganda, about 10, 12 years ago now. That's sort of where our relationship began. And it's always been like the thing we're working towards, right? It's always been like that. Well, you know, eventually we feel like we'll be back in East Africa because that's where we feel like God's calling us, or that's where we feel like we're headed, or what we're building towards, right? And I've come to, and maybe I'm just creating excuses for not getting up and moving to East Africa, but I've come to the conclusion that I think oftentimes God places those, you know, callings and visions for one's life really as a means, or a, I should say, lens to observe the opportunities in the world around you. Mm. And so I feel like all the things that we've done, whether it be Jody's work, my work, the way that we've decided to build our family, the places we've decided to live, they've been through this lens of, well, at a high level, this lens of the Spirit, right? But more specifically, this lens of like this East African sort of Ugandan calling that we have. And quite honestly, I don't know that we'll ever get there back to East Africa.
I hope but it's, we do.
We might, yeah. And
it's still the plan.
But my point is, it's totally changed the way in which we have kind of made decisions and pursued opportunities. And so all the things that we've done, whether it be ministry or corporate innovation or, you know, bicycle startups or whatever it is, we've done because of this sort of thing we're working towards that we feel like God's laid on our hearts. And so, so we've been married for 10 years and we've had about a child every 2 years for the last decade. So Jody's been basically pregnant for 10 straight years. And, I've worked a bunch of different jobs and she's worked a bunch of different jobs, but they've all been around this sort of Spirit-led opportunity, open door calling through the lens of East Africa.
And also through the lens of the path of following the peace of the Lord in all of that. Like, yes, those doors have opened, but there's also been like just a waiting and waiting for that peace before walking that way. But yeah, kind of wrapped up in a nutshell. It's pretty good.
I know, but I want you to talk about your like vocational journey since we have known you as well, if you feel comfortable. Because I think you are so passionate about the work that we do.
That you
do.
Yeah,
the work we do all together is great, isn't it?
Yeah, right. No, it's great. Yeah.
The work that you do. And I think you're so passionate about that. And so.
Mm-hmm. And part of that passion, for sure, the majority of that passion is because of starting off with feeling like I was given this like calling, kind of. It actually was sort of a specific calling into midwifery. So when I was in East Africa, I knew as I was there, I was having this like draw toward medical work. And that was a lot of what I was doing day in and day out. But it was more specific, like when we would go to certain villages, and particularly up in like the IDP camps, that's up way north in Uganda. That's something you could, I don't know, look into, but
yeah, hyperlink that in the show notes.
These are
IDP camps.
Yeah, so I'm up there, but there was these like different medical sort of huts, and there were it was the birthing units where I would go in there, and I felt this like almost like burning in my hands, like I want to be able to do this work, and I feel completely like helpless. Like I see this in front of me and I just want to know what to do. Like this is where I come alive. But still I continued to sit there and pray through that. And it was a time of like just searching and growing in the Lord, growing in all of that. And another time I was in the capital in Kampala, sitting in a different hospital for another reason with a different child. And I'm sitting praying like, Lord, what specifically do you want me to do? Like, really, what more specifically? And as I'm sitting there in that moment, these two doctors walk past talking to each other. And the one says to the other one, we just need more midwives. We need more midwives here, in his like thick Ugandan accent that I'm not going to try to do right now. And it like hit me, you know, when you hear something, but it's in that right moment when the Lord has like opened your heart to that thing. And it hit me like dropped into my heart. And I just was like undone kind of right there. I'm like, that's it. It's midwifery. So anyway, I also really felt a call in that to learn it and to not take shortcuts, because my bend was like, just get home and enroll in midwifery, some kind of midwifery program. And there are some midwifery programs that are a couple of years or, and not that that's bad. Some states do, they do acknowledge that midwifery degree, but I specifically felt him saying, you're going to take the long way. We're going to do this together, and I want you to provide excellent care to this community if we are to go back. And so I enrolled in nursing school and decided to do the nurse midwifery route, which takes significantly longer but allows for you to learn a lot and to be able to practice all kinds of different medicine and in different places. So I came home and went to nursing school. I practiced as a nurse in on a medical surgical unit for a few years. And then as soon as I possibly could, I moved into labor and delivery. But it was, again, like it was being in Uganda and having that call and having that long-term lens that led me to start questioning, all right, what does this look like if we don't have all the intervention? What does this look like if I don't have, you know, a drip to measure the exact amount of medication that I want to give? If I'm in the bush, what do I do when all I've got is me and mom and baby? And so that is what kind of spurred me down understanding and learning about natural birth, because I more so just wanted to know, like, what do I do if I can't have this stuff? But along that journey is where I learned to love natural birth. And so as I practiced in the hospital in labor and delivery, I loved
taking care of moms who were having natural labor and learning ways to help them in various ways. And so, gosh, I became really passionate about just walking with moms through not only labor and birth, but also leading up to those days. It's like, you know, even when I see other friends at church and whatnot, like, I am not so good at the follow-up, the aftercare, but like when somebody's pregnant, it's like when I think of the body of Christ, like the arm, the foot, or whatever, I'm like, I'm the one who, like, I can't wait to pray for that mom, to love that mom, to talk to her, to hear her fears, to hear how she's processing and how she's moving up to that day. And then all through labor, it's just like, it's what makes me come alive. So
what then, body part are you then?
I'm the uterus.
The uterus. Okay.
I'm the uterus. I'm the cervix.
That's what I was wondering the whole time.
Oh my gosh.
So you're not the hand, you're not the feet, you're the uterus.
No, I'm okay. The uterus.
Good to know.
The body needs the uterus though.
Does that make sense though? I mean, I'm sure there's people who maybe don't even know what's a midwife. Is that like, people always say, is that like a doula or what, you know? But anyway, so my long-term goal is to be a midwife and to return to East Africa. And that has shaped what I love about birth for myself and for others.
Well, and just, that's really good. But just so it doesn't look like we're married and on completely different pages.
Sometimes
we are. but I think my point in what I was originally saying is, yes, that is the ultimate goal. But what I've realized is that those visions and callings don't just happen. Mm-hmm. You know, that it's not like we came back from our time working in East Africa and Uganda and Jody went to school and then we like trucked back right away. There were all sorts of things that happened along that timeline, but they all looked very, very different. And we hope and pray that it results in doing work back in that area. But I'm more feeling like just grateful, mm-hmm. and feeling fortunate that I've been able to look at the world in just a little bit of a different way because of the experiences God has led me through, you mm-hmm. know? Mm-hmm. And I guess that's more what I mean. It's not like I'm not over here crossing my fingers, hoping we never return back to East Africa, but, mm-hmm. But more so realizing that God often just places these things on our hearts in an effort to help change the steps we take.
Yeah.
In our journey.
Right.
And, mm-hmm. And that sometimes looked really small. Like the steps look small, mm-hmm. and where they lead are just the next opportunity or the next network or the next person to meet that leads you to the next experience or thing. And we've just seen him work so mightily mm-hmm. through that, both through my, you know, corporate or entrepreneurial initiatives, as well as Jody's sort of hospital work and things like that. So.
No, I think that's an important point because something we talk about on the podcast a lot is that I think a lot of Christians live their lives sort of thinking, someday I'm going to live out my calling, mm-hmm. right? And I think it'd be easy for y'all to be like, someday we'll be back in East Africa and then we'll be doing what God wants us to do, mm-hmm. as opposed to like, no, it may not seem like it right now, but there's like, God is working right mm-hmm. now and we need to mm-hmm. not miss that.
Yeah.
Right. Right.
In pursuing this other goal, even though that's a great goal. Mm-hmm. I do have to point out at this point in the podcast that y'all going back to Uganda might be my greatest fear.
But you're coming with us. Like, I second that.
Like, since we've known you, we've known that that's like your heart yeah. and where you want to go. And it's always like, it's a hard conversation for us yeah. because even though we would pack up and follow you to Uganda, that may not yes. be what God has for us. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's a step in the journey.
Or, you know, you're right. You're right. We just haven't seen it yet.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
I was going to segue. I don't know if you're ready to segue.
Segue.
But I was just thinking, like, as you're talking about this journey and like being refined and listening to the Spirit, like, we have totally called you out, at least when we did our Sabbath podcast, about how your diligence in that practice helped us move to a place of Sabbath.
No, you got to tell the whole story. If you're going to talk about that, you got to tell the whole story. of how they forced us to Sabbath.
They didn't force us to Sabbath.
Aaron, they kind of did.
Aaron forced us to listen to the podcast about Sabbathing.
But he knew
and
what
then
we
the
were in for.
Then the Holy Spirit convicted.
Yeah, that's true. Okay.
Aaron just opened the door for the Holy Spirit to
move.
It
was a Holy Spirit assist.
Right?
That's right.
At least you get the credit for that assist. It's important.
But I think we've talked a couple of times about our practice of Sabbath and like what it's meant to us. But I think it would be interesting to hear your perspective. I mean, we know your perspective on Sabbath. But for other people to hear voices that aren't ours about what practicing Sabbath not only maybe looks like for you, but the ways that that has grown and shaped you as a couple, but also shaped your family.
Mm. Mm. Yeah. Yeah. You can start. I mean, I have all sorts of things rattling around in my head, but
so many things. And we're coming off the heels of Sabbath just yesterday.
That's right. That's right. It was a good one too.
Yeah. Right. Gosh, there are so many things. Let me just narrow this down a little bit. I guess maybe I'll start with what I'm thinking just most currently. I've lately been noticing how much Sabbath is impacting the rest of our week. Because it used to feel, and maybe this is bad, but it used to feel like a stark difference on Sabbath. Mm. And it also could be because this is like in the middle of quarantine where we're like on a permanent Sabbath.
Right.
But,
oh yeah. For those of you listening, coronavirus is still a thing.
2020 still happening. We are socially distanced outdoors.
Yeah, that's right.
Our kids, I don't know where they are, but anyway, point is I have been just noticing how much it's impacting the rest of our week. I guess we're like a year and a half into practicing Sabbath regularly. In many ways feels like it's been a while. In other ways, we're newbies. But it has caused Aaron even to pull back a little bit with work during the rest of the week because of realizing how fast-paced, really kind of unnecessarily fast-paced the rest of the week is. And it has led to definitely implementing some better habits with like devices and whatnot, because on Sabbath we don't have our phones, and just how important that's been and how life-giving that has been. So things like that, I guess those are some examples, but that's has started to bleed into the rest of our week. So I guess just yesterday, that was like one thing we were talking about, just like, this is really impacting, it's changing the way we do the rest of our days as well. So that's one thing, but I'm sure Aaron, you have like a million.
Yeah, I have a lot of thoughts about it. And it's funny, you know, when we first started to, just for those who may not know, and I know Blandfords have shared a little bit about Sabbath, but you know, for us, you know, cause I think a lot of people know about the word Sabbath, and if they don't, if you look it up, you quickly kind of learn what it is or maybe what people think it is, I guess, you know? And for, I think it's very, for many religions and even Christian religions, or I should say Christian denominations, it's very like legalistic and it's very strict and, you know, can't do this, can't do that, can't do this sort of thing. And, so I guess I want to, for those who maybe don't know much about Sabbath, you know, from what we have learned of this, the practice of Sabbath, especially like in today's modern world, it's an opportunity, you know, once a week for 24 hours to cease from the expectations of our culture and expectations of the world. It's an opportunity to kind of resist all the things that sort of everything around you says you should be doing, right? Resist from shopping, resist from the dark news, resist from social media, resist from the project mentality, you know, as we continue to, you know, live in this sort of Magnolia Homes world of needing to another kind of home project DIY sort of thing, right? It's the resisting of, you know, making the things around you look better and for all your hard work and, you know, and we've done a lot of just learning and thinking and processing through all that. And so for us, Sabbath is, and for many, and you know, we aren't the first to say this because mm-hmm. we learned this from other people. But for us, you know, Sabbath is a day where we stop, we resist from those things, and we look for opportunities to just like slow down, mm-hmm. to engage with the world around us, creation, our family, our kids. We don't try and kind of project our way through the weekend, right? For me, I love to mow the lawn, for example, right? I actually really love it. But what I really love about mowing the lawn is the end product, right? It's the perfection that mowing the lawn gets me. And that's like all the wrong reasons. That's not a Sabbath act, right? Because it's, although I love doing it, it's something that I'm looking for, like this perfect outcome. It's this like kind of like neighborly expectation for how my lawn should look. And look at what I've done. I've made it look perfect. You know what I mean? That's not Sabbath, right? And so we kind of cease from those expectations of our neighborhood, of our culture, of our world. Mm-hmm. But I thought that Sabbath was this like sort of, to go along with Jody's point, it was this like thing we did once a week and then we would resume all the hustle and bustle of the week. But it has really, I think that's a really good comment, Jody. It has really changed the way in which we live all week long, you know, and it's changed the way in which we manage our time, the way in which we point our attention. And it's also like gone far beyond just like, it started to like penetrate into other parts of my life and caused me to reevaluate how I'm spending my time and pointing my attention on more than just that. You know, for us, it's Saturday. We spend Saturday Sabbathing. I think for y'all, it's similar.
Yeah.
But it was like, that was the one day I pointed my attention to the right things. But now I'm evaluating all the ways in which I point my attention and nothing's off the table. You know, I feel like culturally we have this expectation like, okay, Lord, you know, I know you're convicting me to spend more time with my family, but you know, sorry, you know, the kids go to public school and they got to leave at 8 and they're come home at 3 or whatever. Obviously quarantine's changed all that, but, or like, sorry, you know, work is, work is the exception, right? Like, oh, I'm not going to do that one thing cause I have to work. And I get it. Everyone has to do their job and do their thing. But for me, I've just stepped back and it's caused me to analyze all the ways in which I spend my time, including how I work, including how I, even like how I invest in my work, meaning, you know, Sabbath has changed the way that I maybe will even, look at like a next job promotion, you know, is if I accept this job promotion, it's more money. Great. More responsibility. Great. But is it the way in which I should be spending my time? Mm-hmm. Is it how I should be channeling my attention? And good Sabbath stuff. Has changed the way I look at that.
Yeah, it's powerful.
And quite honestly, the answer is no, far more than it's yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, so, I mean, but in our culture, right? Like, and I've heard this over and over again, like you got to be switching jobs every 2 to 3 years in order to like sort of like move up the hierarchy, right? That's like the goal, right? Mm-hmm. And that's how countercultural the Sabbath is in daily practice, but also makes you want to be is just pretty astounding, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, as I started this out by saying, you know, like I would consider myself, I don't know if I'd call myself an entrepreneur, but I consider myself like I've got a little bit of that itch, you know, and I want to create, I want to build. I'm, you know, if there's two jobs on the table and one's for like, you know, 50-year-old corporate job and the other's for like a 2-year-old startup, like I'm going to take the startup, you know,
right.
And I like creating, I like building. You know, if I ever have the opportunity to share more about what I do for work, you'll learn that that's very much of the DNA of what I'm doing. But, you know, I've had to, as an entrepreneur, I've had to like really take a second look at that, you know, and because entrepreneurs tend to have endless capacity, you know, Curry, you can probably relate with that
a little bit.
And like, there's always time.
Yeah.
There's always room. Like, this is a good opportunity. It's a great investment. Or like, man, look at what could I get out of this, you know?
Right.
And I've had to really like push back on that. Like when I talk about resisting, that's where I've resisted personally, is resisting in like new opportunities. Mm-hmm. So like, for example, you know, I've been involved with the coffee shop Five and Hook for many, many years. I think four years now. And recently have made the shift to step away from that. And
I didn't realize we were announcing that.
Yeah, well, yeah, you know, it's all right. You know.
No, it's yeah.
It's yeah, seizing yeah. the opportunity to, yeah. to maybe share with some others. Sorry, Mom, if I haven't told you yet. No, and I guess it's, yeah, I also don't want to make like that decision being this like big, I don't want to pretend like that decision was this like big thing. Although, you know, in some ways it was. Yeah. But like it stems from this idea is just how, you know, when I really like took a second look at the way that I was spending my time and the way that we are as a family building our family, you know, I just, you know, it's like, am I pointing my attention in the right places, you know, and am I, you know, I guess giving into the world's expectation of a fast pace, take on more, do more, you know, what's the yield, you know, like sort of pace. And I've had to really resist that and push back on that. And so that was a big part of that decision is to kind of step away. You know, I have one job now. This is the first time I've had one job in like 10 years. Right. Yeah. and a lot of it comes from this altered pace and this more holy pace, this more Jesus-like pace. As we look as a family, as like, how do we walk more in the way that Jesus did, you know, Jesus was gentle and he was sort of slow and, he had very little and he was simple and uninterrupted. Hmm. And, when I look at my own life and I want to be more like that, I think, okay, what are some ways that I can strip back and recenter my attention and resist from the things of this world, even as an entrepreneur? And refocus my attention towards Jesus. Mm. And then out of that Jesus lens, look at ways that we can really advance the kingdom here on earth.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So that was a little bit of that's cognitive vomit, as some of my friends would call it.
No, good stuff.
Yeah. I thought it was interesting. Yeah. So you talked about resisting, right? You're resisting this need to sort of constantly, do new things and all that sort. Mm. Jody, do you have thoughts on like what Sabbath and then like what the resistance that it like causes you to have in your sort of personal life?
Well, I know we've talked about this with you guys that I'm always thankful, I guess, as I'm walking with the Lord and as I'm primarily, I mean, my main ministry right now is I'm home a lot. I mean, I am working a little bit right now in labor, but I'm mostly home, and so that's really a lot of that is my marriage and my kids and how we do that and how we do that in a way that hopefully is honoring the Lord. And inevitably, we're walking that out in front of people, whether that's, you know, neighbors or friends or coworkers or wherever that is. And so whenever I have noticed a way or I've seen a way that God has sort of pressed on me to do something differently or to speak differently, I feel like I'm just thankful that that's an opportunity that I can show a different kind of grace. I can show a different kind of peace and wonder for this life that God has given me. And so that has come in different waves. And I've shared, you know, these ways with you for sure. But that's like in our marriage, especially early on, I was realizing and hearing people complain so much about their spouse. And I was one of those waves where it was like, this is going to be different. Like, we're going to do this differently. And I just, you know, made a vow like at that time, like, I'm not going to talk about my spouse that way. Yeah. And I can't tell you how many times people have even said those words to me, like, you talk so differently about him, you know, like, yeah. Why is that? And I know that's true for you guys as well.
It's powerful stuff though, that people would like recognize that, but it's amazing how much that gets like just. It wiggles its way into like how we function, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And that's huge for people. I mean, and I'm thankful as we continue on and have more years, we're 10 years this month and we're still talking this way about each other. We're still really enjoying each other, but also like choosing to honor each other, both when we're present with each other and when we're not. And that honestly, that honors God, even if I'm not feeling, you know, super pumped about something at that moment. I choose to honor God and choose to honor Aaron in my speech about him. And that looks really different in our culture. And then the second way, which is almost completely the same, but in the arena of children, because I realized pretty quickly it's really natural for moms to want to vent. And I certainly have those moments, and I'm sure I've even had those with you guys. But even with complete strangers at the park, where people are really, really, there's some terrible things said about their kids. And it really breaks my heart. And that was another one of those waves where it was like, Jody, we're going to do this differently. And you are going to be a witness to my love for these children, even on the playground. And it doesn't have to be this big thing where I stand up on, you know, a bench and like give a message. But when I talk about my kids in a God-honoring way, it stands out, which you wouldn't think, you know, even in like a pretty Christianized neighborhood in some of the places where we've lived, how much that kind of knocks people off their feet, like to hear you say, like, I know, aren't they wonderful? Like, there's like, not my kids are, you know, better than whatever, but I'm acknowledging I didn't create them. And I feel honored that I get to even know them, and I get to walk with them, and I get to be their mom. And so, and then Sabbath, I guess that's where I'm getting. I mean, that's been another pretty hard wave where it's like, it hit me like, we're going to do this pace differently. And I didn't realize until we started practicing Sabbath and really slowing down together on that day and with good friends, how different that feels to the rest of the world, just to neighbors, to friends, to like, you're what? Even Christian friends, you're like, so I, like, we can't call you on that day, or we can't, like, just,
what did the neighbors,
like, how shocking.
What did our neighbors say the other day? They had a friend over, and their friend was like, "What? Maybe we can play with the Hookster kids." And the friend was like, "No, they're
not today.
They're Sabbathing." And their friend was like, "What
are
they Jewish?"
Jewish?
And they're like, "No, yeah, they're not Jewish." But it like kind of like it like just, yeah already
I didn't realize just, how different that looks.
Exactly.
Once you start practicing it, you start seeing how busy and how much hustle is all around. And to see us sitting down, hanging out with our kids in the front yard, like reading to them, or, you know, whatever we just happen to be doing, it just kind of like makes people pause. And I realize, like, we live not on a corner, but we live like right along this big long path where people walk a lot. And I'm like, you know, nothing is ever not ordained and covered by the Lord. And I'm like, God, there's a lot of people walking by our yard, you know, like people that we don't know very well. We're getting to know better, also thanks to Sabbath and COVID. But there's like, I mean, tons of people walking by our property, and we're out here like enjoying our family. And it's kind of weird to them. I know it because I watch them watch us and talk. Like, they're wondering what the heck we're doing. But it's our witness, like, with our actions. Yeah. And it was just, yeah, like I said, another wave of like, we're going to do this differently. And people will notice there's something different about you guys. And they have. They have. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a good, you know, we talk all the time, you know, especially with a family of seven, you know, five kids.
Maybe that's why they're looking at it.
Yeah, maybe that's why.
What is up with all those kids?
Yeah, where do they have? Kids
where
come
they
from?
So
from?
Many
like,
kids.
How long have they been having children?
They have so many kids, but they look happy. That's
look
what's
happy.
Weird to people,
yeah.
I think.
Actually, yeah, for sure. But I mean, you know, we talk all the time, Jody and I anyway, you know, we don't like announce this, but it's like our ministry is very much, it sort of like kind of has to be our family right now, you know? Yeah. And I think like these are really like tangible ways that's what it looks like, you know, is... is spending time in our front yard reading books and being together. And, you know, even some of the crazy stuff that's going on in our world right now about, you know, racial injustice and how do we participate in racial reconciliation as the church or as our family? And, you know, for us, the answer is still our family is our ministry. And that doesn't mean we're turning a blind eye to what's happening in the world, but what it means is like we're gonna start talking about these things with our kids now, and in the same ways that's what we're doing with Sabbath, and that's what we're doing with how we're pointing our attention and the way that we're directing our attention, you know. And it's hard. Like our kids almost resist Sabbath sometimes, often not, but sometimes they also just want to do normal things. But we all, in our own ways, have to sort of stop and cease from the world. And they're learning through that, too. And so that's an expression of our family being ministry. And that's okay. You know, that's an okay way to spend our time doing ministry as a family.
I totally agree. I think that's important.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
That's good stuff. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think so often we want to do something, right? We got to do something. I think it's a white, kind of a white thing. You know what I mean? Like we see some injustice or we see some, you know, something breaks our heart and it's like, let's do something. And miss the, like the greatest part of our influence is the people like in our immediate sphere. And if we could just like really pour into them, then we're changing a generation,
yeah.
You know, in important ways.
Yep. So. Agreed.
Which could be huge. From our perspective, when I'm like, if we have five kids and they all had five kids, two generations from now, that's like 125 kids. So I better be careful how I raise these children.
What?
Right?
I
mean, that's
in perspective.
That's,
yeah.
Right. And what are the chances that they'll have five? But one of ours wants to one-up us and wants six. So what? Maybe they all have six and then do that math.
Sal's already told us he's going to one-up us.
Yeah. So anyway,
Senate wants 100.
I'm just saying.
So...
Oh boy.
So he probably will be with one of ours. Yeah. Oh, man. So anyway, but that's a lot of families.
Yeah, you're right.
That is a lot of families that we could be impacting. And yeah, so I can get caught up and start thinking about all the ways that things I want to do outside our home. Sometimes I get like panicky because my hands are full and I'm a helper. I'm a doer and I see things. I'm aware of things I could be doing out there.
Yeah,
yeah, for sure.
But my hands are really full, and sometimes it's that dream of what I think I should be doing or want to do that distracts me from what I actually can do right now, which is sit with them and process whatever's happening right now and let them explore, let them be children, teach them about Jesus more than anything. So,
yeah,
so I'm trying to be present right here and, yeah.
That's a part of that simplicity, though, right?
Yes.
There's a simplicity to living that way as opposed to, like, feeling like you have to put out fires constantly. And it's all your job to, like, handle all the things, right? But there's a simplicity to, like, no, it's just I need to do what I'm called to do right now, right here, right?
Well, it's a proactive way to live, right? Whereas if you don't, you're reactive.
Yeah, you're right.
And I don't know about you, but reactive living is exhausting.
Yeah.
Because you're just trying to figure out how to, like you said, put out that fire or to like shift the attention of your children towards the right things and not the wrong things. Right. And again, we don't like have it perfect by any means. I mean, if I can say anything on this podcast, it's that like, we are not, you know, we're not specialists at this, right? We're two humans made in the image of God that are just trying, like, we're just trying to pursue the heart of Jesus, you know? And,
But I mean, to me, what's interesting, and we were trying to decide before we came over tonight how long we've actually been friends. Mm-hmm. We think
it's like 30 years, right?
Five years. Definitely
yeah,
30
years. Your entire years, life.
Right?
But 5 years? Did you say 5 years?
I think six.
Yeah.
Is it six?
Yeah, it was when Ada was a baby. Let's see. She's six.
Ada's six, and Ada was like 3 months old, I think, when we met, something like that.
So
because we started going to Life Church at when she was a few months old.
Right. Okay.
So
I mean,
Curry,
we might have been friends before that.
But. More right. Mm. but I think too, like, we've watched you prioritize your family, but I think you're also really exceptional about creating community wherever you are. As we've been sitting here talking, I was thinking about the first time we ever had dinner at your house. Mm-hmm. It was before the Cherry House, whichever house that was. Were you
before
in Cherry?
The Cherry House?
Which
Webster.
Was it?
Oh, the Webster House.
Webster.
Oh,
okay.
You're right. The street next to Cherry.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Yeah, right.
So
it's close. Vicinity.
Like, what
but
cherry
it was
house?
The house.
Did it look like a cherry?
It was the house before that.
Mm-hmm. Where you lived over by Chad and Kim.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. The Countryside House.
Yeah. Oh, okay. So not only did we show up and you had someone else live with you, but you had asked Bennett what would make him feel most comfortable to eat at your house. Oh. And he said pancakes and bacon. And so we showed up.
I remember that.
Did we have breakfast for dinner?
Yes,
oh, totally
we did.
We totally did. And champagne. Because I popped a champagne cork and like hit your ceiling that
night. We didn't own that house.
Do you remember that? I don't remember that at
yes,
all.
Yes, I do.
But,
I do.
But
yes.
What I remember,
I
waffles or something, is, but it was Bennett was in a nervous stage and he was anxious about going to your house. And so you just said, like, what's going to make you feel comfortable? And I think, like, when I think of you guys, that is what you just have this gift of, like, making people feel comfortable. Mm-hmm.
Totally.
What? But like, but it's literally everywhere. Like, we're here at your house and we watch your neighbors feel comfort. We're with you at church. We see like people comfortable with you. And I know there's not an anecdotal, like, we follow these three steps.
No, there's a it's a 10 step.
You have a book. Yeah. Oh, yeah. You have a book you want to sell.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Written by Aaron. Yeah.
Put it in the show notes.
Just buy my book. You'll be fine.
Yeah. But like, what? Yeah. What gives you that ability to create space for others?
Well, first,
Jody, really sweet.
Yeah,
man.
That's really nice. Yeah.
Wow.
Jody probably has far better answers to what you're going to ask.
Gosh.
But I was going to say that we feel that way about y'all, which is really interesting because I don't feel that way about myself. And so I'm like, wait, I think you're describing the Blanfords.
I'm pretty sure. See, it's your magic table that you brought here and brought
y'all
all the food.
Y'all definitely have a magic table, though. I mean, you know.
Gosh.
We've watched that with people over and over again. I mean, for the first 4 years we knew you, you always had somebody living at your house. You know what I mean? Yeah. And like even the way that you got married, started dating in Uganda was like in a like communal living sort of scenario, you know, and you still have relationships with those people today.
True.
You know, I feel like that's
unique
big.
And it's unique.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think because it's your story, you can write it off as like normal, but I think like it is really unique. And so,
gosh, you're giving us stuff to think about on
Sabbath
this week.
Also, like, you didn't give us any prep questions, so
I'm
thinking off the cuff here.
I meant to, but I was making guacamole, and the guacamole
was way more important.
It was so
sending
good.
The question.
It was worth it.
A quick comment about that. I had this realization the other day. You know, we just spent the last year. The last year was the first year in 8 years we had lived with just our family. Otherwise we've for the past, on and off, mostly on for the past 8 or 10 years. I'm trying to remember the exact timeline, but it's something like 8 years. Mm-hmm. We've had someone living in our home with us, for various things, you know, different people's stage of life. Sometimes it's like needs that we have, like we've got an extra bedroom. We need to rent because we can't, you know, we can't afford rent or whatever. Right.
That's true.
But for the most part, it was because of people we were engaging with on a regular basis that had a need, you know. Jody?
Honestly, I feel like that's more a conversation of of generosity, not because we're generous, but because we started off with so little and still have pretty little, like financially, but we've always been given, many times have been given these places. That home in particular on Countryside had an empty room, and we sort of, I think we've always lived, and we were raised sort of this way as well, I think, too, just to feel like this isn't ours, that we're necessarily like, well, what do we do now? Let's share our thing with them. Like, this home is the Lord's. He's given us this, and there's an empty room in it. So he knows better than we do who might need that. And we very much have given, especially home, our home, wherever we're living, we've given that to God to say, like, what do you want to do with this? Because it's your house. We're thankful that we get to live here. Thank you for this shelter and this place that we can make home. But clearly we have this extra space. So what would you do with that? You know, and so, and he always had somebody in mind. So there actually was like, it was consistent, especially in that house. It wasn't necessarily, it was just like, because that space belonged to the Lord. And we just said, what are you going to do with it? It wasn't like, well, I guess we'll make this big sacrifice. That's our room that we love. I mean, it just didn't feel like ours,
yeah.
I guess.
Yeah. It was just like, we
had
a house.
And we didn't have money to give, like, but we could give of that space back.
Yeah, exactly.
It wasn't ours.
Well, and I think we look at, I think so often as a church, especially, like, we look at the only ways you can give to your church community is through finance, which, like, we all know that's not true. I mean, there are so many people who aren't in a position to give financially, but they do have giftedness and resources. They just might look different than money, right? Mm-hmm. And so for us, we had very little money, very little. And it wasn't, but it wasn't this intentional, I'll be honest.
No.
It was just, it was sort of more practical. Like we, you know, we had a 3-bedroom house, but there was this like 4th bedroom off the back of the house. And we were kind of like, why do we need
two family rooms?
You know, it was very practical. It was like, we don't. And also there's this guy we know that needs a place to live, you know?
Right.
And you know, it would make sense for him to live in community with us and blah, blah, blah. And so he did. And then that guy moved on. And then this gal moved on, or moved in rather. And so it was more like, it was a kind of an analysis of what we had. And if what we had was enough, but there was some surplus, how do we use that surplus? And often God had a very clear answer to how to use that surplus.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure.
Why do you think, I mean, where does the like value for community come from though? Because I feel like y'all are always very intentional about bringing people into your home and, you know, just being like with people. Like, and I feel like that is not always the norm for us. It's a lot easier to be secluded in our day and age, right? It's a lot easier to sort of like just, yeah, not like relationships are messy, right? And it's awkward and uncomfortable. And like having real relationships is not always the easiest path. So why pursue community?
That's a really good question. Well, I think, yeah, go for it.
No, Aaron. I was going to say, you know, I grew up in a community that was very clear. You know, so I'm a pastor's kid. Grew up in a church plant. And the call to action was really simple. You know, there wasn't like these 10 things or rules you need to follow. Although there was obviously some of that because of the Bible and the 10 commandments.
So literally 10 rules to follow. Yeah. You've only been following one of them for a year and
that's
a half.
Right.
Though, so.
That's right. No, but I mean, it was, you know, I grew up in a community that tried to push their people to just simply love God and love neighbor. You know, it wasn't a mission or a even commandment. It was a way of life, you know? And, you point your attention toward God, and out of the heart of God, out of the heart of Jesus, you love the people around you, and you share the resources you have, and you, express the grace that God's sort of gifted to your family. And, so that to me, it was my upbringing, you know, it was the way that my family brought me up, to really pursue loving God and loving neighbor. And by the way, isn't just your neighbor, right?
Yeah,
not just like literally the guy next door, although sometimes it's that literal, right? You know, but neighbor is all it is. It's mankind. It's people. It's the people you encounter is neighbor. You know, it's the people in your whoever walks within the proximity of your
life
is your neighbor, you know, and those neighbors can look all different sorts of ways. They sometimes have a past that is unfortunate. They sometimes make decisions that are, let's just say unfortunate. but they all deserve love, and they all deserve acknowledgement that they're fighting their own battle of some sort, you know, because we're all broken and we're all sitting in this world trying to figure out how to get through it. And some of us are gifted, not gifted, but have been able to sort of see this world through the lens we've been referring to, right, of God and our creator, and be able to look beyond this world. But many aren't. You know, and many don't have that opportunity, or they have a past that has caused their view of the world to look much, much, much harder, much, much harder.
Yeah.
Or even a present that causes their view of the world to look much, much harder, whether that's the way they were raised in their family, the way that their dad interacted with them as a kid, or the color of their skin, or whatever, right?
Yeah.
And it was very clear in my upbringing and in the church that I grew up in to love God and to love neighbor. And there's no exclusions to that. That was an inspiration behind why community became important to us. And it wasn't a decision we made. It was very natural and organic. that of course we would welcome people in our home, and of course we would give them a room and a place to stay. And so that's sort of what it was for me, I suppose.
But I would say, the lessons about like the value of community came by doing that, by walking with those people, because we had, we would set up times to, like, it's hard. Like, you know, when you're in a marriage, you kind of brush up against each other. We realized pretty quickly after living with the first person that, okay, if we don't set up times like each week to bring to the table some things that we want to like just say, a lot of stuff might get kind of missed and not talked about, and grudges start to become there, and people get, it can get out of hand if you don't continue to intentionally walk together and acknowledge differences and figure out how to, like, this person feels offended when I talk that way. Okay, I better not. So those kinds of things that we learned along the way, we learned by living in community with other people. And those people had people stay with them. So we had that kind of community, and we would just sit around and ask them questions about their life and their upbringing. And I remember one of the guys we lived with, he had a professor, and at the time he was going to Wheaton College. He was living near, going to school near our house. And he said his professor told him once, obviously he loved books, but he said, "I've never read a book that's more interesting than a person." Mm. So if you don't find that person interesting, you're probably asking the wrong questions because you're just not taking the time to actually get to know them. So I don't know, that hit me. I think about that like all the time. That was probably 8 years ago that I had that conversation with him. But, you know, that came out of living in community. And and I really, I find that to be true. And we've found that to be true of the people who've lived with us, even if they're really different than us, they're really interesting and they're on a journey and they have a lot to share and a lot to teach us. And it's true. They're every person that we've encountered is far more interesting than any book I could ever read because they were made by the creator. They are a story in and of themselves. So,
To add to that too, like, I'm sure, there's we could talk about a lot of things for hours and hours, but, you know, community, although it would seem natural and the way that we're describing it seems very like organic and like just sort of happened, you know, it's not without sacrifice, you know, I mean, you definitely have to, there is a giving up of oneself in order to enter into community. And that's, I think that's a balance you have to ride, you know, I think, especially with like a big family, like we have, you know, what does that look? I think community looks very different now that we have five kids, right? Than it did when we have one. And I think that's okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But the way in which we are giving our time and sacrificing, so to speak, is different now. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's not without sacrifice. And it's not without kind of, laying yourself down to a degree. And, I think that's a lot of the issue that we're seeing in the world today. You know, Jody just so delicately described sort of, I guess, just listening, kind of acknowledging one's differences and listening and hearing where they came from and what they've experienced. And I can't help but look at the world we're in right now as we speak, with all the issues and conflicts and butting of heads between different political parties and different races and things like that, and acknowledge that we have a very clear call as people to sit and to listen to the differences and the positions and places of other people. And but that doesn't happen without sacrifice of oneself. And as Jody shared just about community, you know, I think we cannot delete certain people types out of that sort of equation and type and sort of Yeah, opportunity. You know, we've had all sorts of different people live in our home and be a part of our home who have very different opinions than ours. And it takes a real...
Surrender.
Surrender. Yeah, I guess surrender and willingness to stop talking and to start listening to what they have to say. I mean, and it doesn't mean you agree always. In some cases, we need to agree more, certainly. But we have to listen to each other and we have to understand where each other have come from. Otherwise, we can't journey together and we can't work towards this kingdom building thing that we're trying to do without doing that, you know?
Amen.
Good stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
How many hours does this podcast go?
We only have 3 hours left. So.
Okay. Great. Throw another topic at us. My gosh, guys.
Yeah, no, this has been great. Thanks for participating in the 100th episode. We're at 58 minutes.
100.
I know, but I want to know their strangest jobs.
Oh, okay.
And what they would
find. Oh, is that a thing?
No, this is how we wrap up everyone.
That's right. That's right.
It is a thing.
Yeah.
I get a microphone. I get to tell you what to do.
I do whatever she says.
You know, it's funny. I haven't listened to all the episodes by any means. I don't want to pretend like I'm like, I know I've listened to every single Theology of Hustle episode, but I do know that this is a thing. And every time I'm like, oh, I wonder how I would answer that. And then what's funny is I never, leaning into this conversation, I didn't think, like I didn't prep for it.
No.
And so now I'm like, I don't know.
It's better unprepped. You know?
Oh my gosh. I mean, I don't have a weird, I guess, weird job, but I encountered weird stuff.
I think that's fair.
Yeah.
In the hospital. I mean, labor maybe less. No, I've seen some weird stuff in labor. That's for sure. But like, this is maybe like, is this allowed on Theology of Hustle? And I won't break it. I mean, this is not a violation of HIPAA. There's no, names to be said, but I worked on a medical surgical unit. And so these people came from surgery. And we would take care of them on our unit if they were to stay overnight. But some of them came because they put gerbils in their butt.
What?
Or
that's not true.
Yes, this is my favorite Joni story ever. Or
gerbils
cucumbers.
In their butt.
Listen,
I've never even heard this story. Stop. I've been married to you for 10 years.
Are you kidding me?
I don't think I've heard the gerbil butt story.
Oh my gosh, people get creative.
Oh my gosh.
With some of their animals in their bottom parts, but also. One time, now listen, this is better because of the description of it, but a cucumber also in the rectum, but there was a bite out of the cucumber.
No!
Like, I'm going to take a crunch out of this. It's going up the bum. Oh my gosh, you have to take this out. But, you know, and then you take care of them and you give them care and you treat them with dignity, but you know, right there in the chart, cucumber up the bum.
Man.
That had a bite out of
Well, I just don't know how you look someone in the eyes.
Try to top
you
that, guys.
I was going to say, I should have started.
So
I
what's worse,
started.
Though? The gerbil or, yeah, I don't know.
The gerbil.
The gerbil.
The gerbil is definitely worse.
Oh,
they can do some
goodness.
Damage. No
I
one put a gerbil
only,
in their butt.
I can't imagine.
Oh, my gosh.
I don't.
You'll never look at them the same.
I do not have a great answer to this question.
What? Not had weird jobs.
No, I've had very normal jobs.
Oh, so normal.
And that story was awful.
Sorry, you could just stop there.
They're not even going to...
Oh, a truck also, like a kid's toy truck.
No.
I'm not kidding. People do this.
There's no way. There's no way that this can be produced. So let me try.
Gonna be rough,
let me try and bring this home. So although my wife's weird job was more a story about a normal job that she encountered and had some interesting elements to that story, which we'll spare everyone from, hopefully.
I don't know.
No, that's going in.
It's going in.
That is, oh, that is in the podcast. Right.
Sorry.
Well, I don't have a great answer. I really don't. Like, I've worked in... Yeah, see, I don't have a good answer.
Yeah, it's all right, babe.
No, I've worked in very normal places. I mean, I think probably the most interesting job I ever had was I committed 3 years to doing nonprofit work. And that was the most interesting job I had because I, ended up doing some travel along with that. And you just experience some weird things when you travel. And, our organization was, partner with nonprofits in East Africa. And, you just see stuff that, it's like you didn't know existed before.
Right.
You know, for example, there was a trip that I went on and we visited a community that had been like crazy affected by elephantiasis.
Oh yeah.
Which is like a bacteria, I think, that, enters into people who don't legs of people who don't have, shoes,
yep.
And things like that. Giving it a very little information, obviously, but, and this whole community had elephantiasis and it was just interesting to witness that and experience that. And, that's probably the weirdest thing I've ever sort of experienced in my job. Even though my jobs itself haven't been that weird.
But. Yeah. Good. Well, I think JJ, you should do the honors. Is if we're going to ask the one question, we have to ask
the other. I'd already thought through
gosh.
That. Give me the microphone and the power goes to my head. So what is one piece of advice you would give someone who wants to bring the kingdom of God into their work?
Yeah, great job.
I've listened to all of the podcasts.
Wow. Good for you.
Gosh, should we just do one of us? This could be like 100 hours.
No, one. Make it quick. She asked for all one right. piece of advice.
One piece of advice.
I'm going to listen to yours and then take yours. So go ahead.
Gosh, I think just to walk confidently into that job, knowing who you are, knowing that God, I honestly would sometimes just remind myself as I walked into the hospital, my father is the king. Like, I worked with a coworker who her mom was the president of the hospital, and she walked with such confidence, obviously, because she was aware that, she had this kind of sort of strength on her side. Mm-hmm. But I would remind myself as I walked in, my father is the king of every single person here and me. He is our father. And so I guess, because I think insecurity can be a killer of our ability to really wholeheartedly pour out and care for coworkers or for people that we are, in my case, like taking care of. But when I would walk in with that confidence, just remembering my dad, my father, is the ruler of this whole place. It gave me just a freedom to, like, I could lose my job that day and I still could walk out of there, like, with peace, or I could get a really hard patient and they could say whatever they want to me. And I will just be like, that's sweet. I just feel like because my identity and my confidence was so rooted and is so rooted in who my father is. And so, I guess to just not walk in and out with fear and anxiety because your father is the king. I guess that's it.
That's powerful.
That is. Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah.
I think for me, I think this is also like a bit of a recent conviction for me too. So it's a bit top of mind. But I think, looking at your life and your job and your family and, sort of aligning that with the values that God has sort of laid on your heart and on your family and on your marriage. And, when you really sit down and you weigh, all those things against each other. Nothing should be negotiable. When you look at God, what is it that you want me to surrender to you? Or what is it that you want me to reevaluate? Or where do you want me to resist this world or this culture or the expectation of my community or neighbors that is earthly and worldly? Nothing should be negotiable. Everything should be surrendered. And with that, you should be willing to make hard decisions for the sake of the values that God's laid on your heart.
You mean non-negotiable, right? Nothing should be non-negotiable, like that you won't
Yes.
Yes. That what you did wouldn't I say? Be negotiable. You want to negotiate, right?
Yes. Everything should be non-negotiable.
It's getting late.
Is
right.
that what I said?
Like a non-negotiable.
Yeah.
Right? Now I'm mixing them up. It's too late.
It's like two negatives.
My
right?
point my point is... Yeah.
Like nothing's off
you should
the table,
yeah, nothing's
right?
off the table. Yeah. Sorry right. if I've confused it, but...
or I did. I don't know. I'm
my
sorry.
Point is that you should be willing to look at everything you're doing and make adjustments to those things or totally remove those things or add things to your, you know, life. For yeah. the sake of the way that God's calling you and directing you. So that would be my thing.
I love it. Y'all, this was like a perfect way to celebrate 100 episodes.
100,
guys,
dude.
I wanted so to crazy. Interview you guys. And yeah, you we threw were, some beefy topics
was,
at us.
Yeah, our goal is to turn all questions over to you. And you just, man.
We've done this for a while.
Yeah, you're good.
So, you know.
Well, I would like to say, you know, congratulations to yes. you guys. 100 episodes is no small feat.
It's impressive.
And I remember when this was just a little seed or, you know, thought.
Around the magic table.
Around, yeah. you know, theology of hustle. Mm-hmm. By the way, I think we should throw out the hustle because I think it's more like theology of slow, gentle pace of life.
I don't
but anyway.
Think that sells as well.
No, it doesn't sell as well. You're true. Yes, yeah, it's true. That's true. But I remember when this was a seed of a thought and it became a thing. And that thing kind of blossomed at 100 episodes. And so y'all are doing just some incredible work through this podcast. And you've really given voice to a lot of people that would otherwise not have a place to share. And so thanks for doing that. And thanks for really using this platform as a tool to advance the kingdom in your own ways.
Thanks, y'all. I that means a lot.
Yeah.
We love y'all. Thanks for doing this.
Right. And if yeah. you hate Magic Table, it's actually Jody and Aaron's fault. So.
That's true. That's true.
Put all the hate comments
yep.
to them.
Magic Table is inspired by Jody and Aaron. So
we are
you're welcome.
Big Blandford fans. So we That's think right. so highly of That's you guys. Right. And we, yeah. All We're right. proud of you. We're thankful for you. And
very much so.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks, y'all.
But can we do an episode where we throw a bunch of random questions at you?
That sounds
like
fun.
Like speed questions.
That sounds fun.
Yeah.
We are not going to send you.
When we get to 200.
Yeah. Episode 200 is Hoekstra's host.
200 questions.
Hoekstra takeover.
That's right.
Oh, yep. man.
Thanks, y'all.
Anyway, thanks.
Love you guys.
Love you. Well, I hope you enjoyed this 100th episode and just maybe that this episode gave you some food for thought in any of these places. For 100 episodes, I would love to hear your favorite Theology of Hustle episode out of the last 100. So shoot a message to me on social media. I'll try to put up a post or something, but I would love to hear your favorite episodes. There's a ton of them. Just thanks for hanging with me. If you want to do something tangible for the podcast, you can go to the bottom of your app and leave a rating and review on iTunes. That just helps get the word out about the podcast. Let people know people are listening. And yeah, thanks for coming along this journey and excited to journey on further. It's been a great ride and we love the support. And so until next time, get out there or stay in and hustle.